This is Primal Screen, a weekly radio show airing Monday evenings on Triple R. Primal Screen is about movies, from the ones on the big screen to the ones you stream. Hope you enjoy the podcast version and feel free to get in touch via the Primal Screen Facebook page or the Triple R website.
To Primal Screen, a show and podcast all about screen culture, from movies on the big screen to whatever you're streaming. We're broadcasting tonight from the Triple R studios on the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation. This is and always will be Aboriginal land. I'm your host, Flick Ford, and I'm joined in the studio tonight by Alice McShane. Hey, Alice.
Hey, Flick.
And Sylvie Van Wall. Hey, Sylvie.
Hello.
So tonight's show, we've got a double bill of fresh new horror. Later on, we're going to discuss the comedy horror series Widow's Bay, which is currently streaming on Apple TV here in Australia. It stars Matthew Rhys as the mayor of a sleepy New England island who is working hard to boost tourism and reassure everyone that the island isn't cursed. But first up tonight, we're going to slip into Kane Parsons' debut horror feature, Backrooms, starring Chiwetel Ejiofor and Renate Reinsver. Now, the film is based on a viral web series of the same name that Parsons created, and Parsons is now credited as A24's youngest director.
Incredible.
Yeah, it really is.
Doesn't make me feel old at all.
And it seems like there's a bit of a trend. Like, I was thinking about that sort of shift from YouTube to horror. The Raka Raka has kind of followed that pipeline. And also more recently, Curry Barker, who did Obsession, which is out in cinemas at the same time. That would be a great double bill, actually.
It's just a reminder to me that I need to revive my YouTube account and start making creepy videos.
I would love if Kane was like A24's youngest director at like 45, but he's the youngest director at 20. He was born in 2005, which is the year that YouTube debuted, unfortunately for us. I know.
It's incredible.
This is true millennial horror here tonight as we grapple with our age.
Yes.
And it's even perhaps more wild, and I know you're going to touch upon this in a moment, but it's set in 1990.
Yeah.
And he wasn't around.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we go there. Yeah.
Yes. Now, Backrooms is about a furniture salesman, Clark, who's played by Ejiofor, who discovers a portal in the basement of his showroom, and it leads him to a seemingly endless labyrinth of offices that are bathed in this yellow fluorescent light and littered with familiar work objects and remnants of the natural world. Now, Sylvie, you had the pleasure of speaking with Kane.
I did, and he's lovely and so passionate about what he does, and it's just great to see someone who has put his mind to something and achieved something really great.
Agree. Well, enjoy. You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R.
It's Sylvie Van Wall here. Earlier in the week, I spoke to Kane Parsons, the young director of the terrifying new A24 horror film, Backrooms. Here's a clip.
I found something in the store.
Okay. What did you find?
The place. Look, I know how this sounds, but you gotta understand, it's massive in there.
I'm not saying I don't believe you.
Okay, I'm gonna come back here with proof.
All right, you feel me?
Yes.
Follow my lead.
Clark, what is this?
It's what I'm trying to figure out. I've been here every night since I found the place, and I still barely scratched the surface. All right, just take it slow.
Pull me up.
Hi, Kane. How are you?
I am doing excellent. How are you doing?
Yeah, amazing. I gotta say, I loved the back rooms. I had the uniquely terrifying experience of watching this film alone in a dark cinema just a few days ago. No one else was there. The projectionist hit play, left. I had no support.
How it was meant to be seen, so that's great to hear.
I'm still undecided on whether it was like the best way to see it or the worst, because I tell you what, some of those jump scares really got me. I think I want to start with, you know, the fact that you've come from YouTube, and there's this whole trend now of, you know, people getting into proper film from making YouTube stuff. Like, we had the Philippou brothers, also known as Raka Raka on YouTube, you know, now they're making, you know, they make Talk to Me, Bring Her Back, and it's fantastic to see that. So you've had a similar trajectory. So what do you think makes YouTube such a breeding ground for this new talent?
So my perspective is before anything else, is that I have not been doing this long enough to have a full final academic wise, the true perspective. I have guesses, and I have, you know, my own personal thoughts, of course. And what I think and feel is largely, I think YouTube, I think it's a bit incidental. I think that, and again, I can only speak for myself, but I feel as though there's sort of an inevitable aspect to people of a certain age bracket who have not yet been able to enter the industry, who are like, you know, hoping to get in there. In some form, who just enjoy creating film in whatever media, like, you know, film is a spectrum. There's a lot of different ways to, you know, I guess the term film can be slapped onto a lot of different projects. I enjoy like ARG materials online, like stuff that is maybe a little less conventional in format, but I think you could still make a case that that's a form of film. But regardless, people who have that tendency, if they're not getting the resources, because there's not a lot of slots to be, you know, making stuff at like this level. I don't know how it happened for me. It feels like, you know, some shadow figure behind the scenes pulls a lever and the algorithm gives you a jackpot a little bit. But I can't help but feel that, like, YouTube's been around for the past 20 years. If you haven't been able to make something broader in the industry, but you're making all the time and you're developing that trade, it's like YouTube is kind of the only viable platform if you want to actually be getting some kind of like following or engagement with your stuff. Like, that's the place to do it. So it kind of, I would think, just kind of so happens that people are developing their skills in the same way any filmmaker would, but YouTube is just the place to present that work. So you end up with the visual of like people going from YouTube to Hollywood. But really, I think it's just like the best available option in a lot of cases prior to building something at a bit of a bigger scale, or at least for me is very much that case. And I would assume for, but yeah, I mean, I think it's inherently, there's nothing specific about YouTube. It's just that it allows you to share what could be a very traditional piece of filmmaking in a way that is not gatekept and not with a big price tag attached. So hopefully if you've got something going behind the scenes and you're able to lobby for something a little bit bigger, then you can have the cool story of having taken years of YouTube practice to something bigger, I guess.
Yeah. Were you always hoping to be a film director? Was that the goal?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I used the label directly because I think I like jumping between different forms of media. Like, I do a lot of music. I would love to go into games at some point. Again, a lot of the stuff I have done with film online is not maybe traditional film. Like, some of it is just more in like a bit of a weird container. So I think just like media direction, I don't know. Film direction is probably the most apt cultural term to use for what I do, but I haven't been obsessed with the label of specifically like, and go to the theater when I was a little kid, have stars in my eyes and be like, this is exactly the thing I want to do and only this. It's more of just, I want to, like, art and film is a conversation where you're talking to more than one person at a time, usually lots of people, and you're trying to identify things that will resonate for groups rather than speaking one-on-one with someone and having a discussion that way. So, you know, I think there's just a lot of different ways you can approach that activity and sort of curating an experience for people. So I like to stay open to all of those forms and ideally in a perfect world jump between them. But I do love this quite a lot.
Yeah, I have to say, I hadn't seen much of what you'd done online before. I had seen the original Backrooms video and I shared that around, and yeah, very spooky. But the main thing for me that resonated was that I felt immediately like I'd been there before in a dream. And I think this is almost a universal experience, or at least, you know, from what I read online, it is that we all have these like dreams or nightmares or like warped memories of being in what we call now a liminal space, where it's like familiar. Like, for me, it was a shopping mall that I went to a lot as a kid, but like everything's wrong. The stairs are everywhere and there's too many doors and I'm getting lost and there's always a pool involved. And so just watching that on the screen and seeing it like tap into that, yeah, it's so unique. But I want to know, like, what is your experience of the Backrooms? Do you have a personal...
Pretty similar to what you just said. And because that's what I find so compelling, when there is something so simple but universal there, and the fact that people have such a, myself included, have such a hard time identifying what it is about it that is so compelling, then there you go. That's a very compelling road to try to go down. And that's what the series has partially been looking at. And I think there's a lot of meat at the bottom of that well. But I think that, like, you know, essentially my guess, if I had to guess, would be that, like, a big part of why these liminal space image compilations, because, like, that's what I really, like, engaged with at the time when I started, like, the first short, which was kind of just kind of a fun demo. I didn't even really think about it as a short film, or I didn't expect it to go anywhere. I kind of just did it as a fun little exercise. The rest of the series I took a lot more seriously, but that first one was sort of just like a palate cleanser in a way creatively. But I think, like, what those images have in common, the ones that are successful, tend to feel very incidental. You don't feel the author behind the camera at all, because these are mostly like property listings, and they're on like real estate sites, and they're like stuff from your childhood, like your family Digicam SD card that you're looking at from like 15 years ago or something. And I think inherently, like, the visual quality of a lot of these photos that perform well, they're usually compressed, they've got some like Digicam halation on them, they've got, like, you know, front flash photography, the white balance is usually fucked. Like, the original Backrooms image, that location, the wallpaper is not even yellow, that's all just in camera making it feel that way. And and I think that those traits kind of color the past in the same way that, like, people think of the 30s or 40s, and that's all black and white. And it's probably the same, a similar trait doing part of the work there. But then I think, again, like, the lack of authorship behind these photos, and the fact they feel like they could have come from your subconscious, or they could have come from your memory. I think what it is like too much clutter, too much detail in one of these photos, and it becomes too specific. But when they are, like, right in the right range of being, like, not quite too, not very specific, I feel like, incidentally, most of the successful ones are kind of sparsely decorated and focusing on just a few key elements, but without, like, a single focal point. It sort of allows it to feel like a arbitrary snapshot pulled out of some place that you, you know, one of these many isolated memories you might have had as a child that you can't really fit into a context. You can't, it's a visual, it's a little palette of visuals, maybe some tiny micro event, but you can't place where that memory took place or when it took place. It's just like a thing, and it gets brought up in the form of dreams sometimes, and it feels like these photos are kind of directly tapping into sort of bringing that out of your mind and reassembling it into a visual form that you're able
Yeah, I can't help but mention that you're very young. You weren't around in the 90s, and yet the film is set in 1990. Yes. So how do you make sense of that?
Largely, the desire to have it set in 1990 comes from the narrative component of, like, I think it's a very particular, I mean, this obviously taking place in Silicon Valley in California, United States, so you're going to have a inherent aspect of, like, American industrial bias to it, but it is global. It is still global. Like, in that period, there are so many things sort of lying in wait, not quite being tapped into and not quite being sprung upon the general populace, that are just sort of, like, creeping under the surface. And I feel like there's so many, obviously you can talk about, like, you know, being close to the dawn of the internet and whatnot, and, like, you know, ARPANET's just kind of been going through a metamorphosis, and there's so many radically huge changes that would be coming in the next couple of years, and certainly by the beginning of the early 2000s, it's all pretty cemented and locked in place, and we're in a pretty adjusted trajectory from there. And I think the Backrooms has always just kind of been, for me at least, with, like, the science fiction view of this project. And but I also think, just generally, I like to look at it as something that allows a sort of fleshed out conversation between, like, individuals and the systems they inhabit and the systems that we propagate on, like, a species level, but in, like, a, not in, like, a, not for the sake of being grandiose, but just, like, what is the little thing in all of our brains that causes us to all collectively drift this way as a society, not in the way that we particularly like, that any of us particularly like, but yet it happens nonetheless, and we're trying to find a way to reconcile that, but we're also totally tainted by our own inner worlds, and we almost can't even see clearly through that at all, because, you know, there's a lot of ways you can look at it, but I think it's a, for the sake of setting and letting it be about a group of people standing around a Pandora's box. And Silicon Valley is obviously a very apt place to do that, and that's a very particular point in time.
Totally. We have to wrap. I'm so sorry. This is so fascinating, but
I've been doing a lot of these today, so my brain's like, whoa.
I understand. I understand. I don't envy your position. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was me, Sylvie Van Wall, speaking to Kane Parsons, who directed Backrooms, the new horror from A24, which is in cinemas now.
Triple R.
You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R with Sylvie Van Wall, Alice McShane, and myself, Flick Ford. We opened tonight's show with Sylvie's interview with filmmaker Kane Parsons about his debut feature, Backrooms. I still can't believe that he's like made his, this film at 19 is able to speak so eloquently about internet lore, the 90s.
It's his element, totally. Yeah.
And sad supermarkets and real estate photos. Alice.
Yeah.
What did you think of Backrooms?
Oh, I mean, first up, thank you for that great interview, Sylvie. It's so incredible to hear it elaborated on. I mean, as you sort of said, Backrooms has emerged from the internet. It's emerged from a 4chan prompt. So back in 2021, a then 16-year-old Kane Parsons began working on the web series, and it was actually inspired by a prompt from 2019. And I think once the series started debuted, he received like a number of, you know, offers from studios. A24 was the suitor, but when you look at the credits, you notice like Osgood Perkins is credited as a producer,
and James Wan.
Yeah. But when I was going through the list of the credits, it looks like a lot of Osgood's regular collaborators have come on board for this. And when you watch the Backrooms web series, which I did today to get a bit of backgrounding, it really does. It is so true to the spirit of the original web series, but then elevated to this like beautiful, creepy, deeply unsettling place. So I really enjoyed Backrooms. I think it's such an engaging premise. You know, you have this the creation of these beautiful liminal spaces. The engaging premise, I suppose, based on, you know, the necessary detritus, the necessary like horrible hidden away areas that allow us to enjoy the facade, that allow us to enjoy the front facing presentation. And in like a capitalistic society, it feels like, you know, satisfying in a way to claw at what might lie behind or lie beneath. So I found it to be deeply unsettling. I have a lot more to say, but on the back of your interview, actually with Kane, I think my feelings have softened some. What did you think, Sylvie?
Yeah, I really dug it. I really liked it. Stylistically, yeah, totally unique and very cool. And I mentioned this briefly in the interview, but I did feel like watching it that, yeah, it was a place that I had been to somehow, you know.
I loved your observation
so
on
creepy.
That.
Yeah.
And the familiarity, because I was trying to put my finger on it, because I have not, wasn't really familiar with a lot of the backstory. I mean, I'd read about it, but I wasn't someone who engaged with those earlier YouTube videos. Yeah. I didn't have that context that I was coming into it. And I had that same sense that you touched upon of familiarity.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking in my brain, like, where have I got this from?
Right. Yeah.
And I was trying to think, and I think shit real estate photos.
Yeah.
And also just being in really sad, depressing supermarkets.
Yeah, just existing in the
90s.
Yeah, and
exactly.
I remember going to like the offices my mum would work at, and then, and also just, yeah, like going to random stores that, you know, had those lights and that fading wallpaper. And I also have, yeah, dreams about being lost in shopping centres all the time.
Nightmares, surely. Nightmares.
And it's a mix of like nostalgia mixed with Uncanny Valley, all these things that are like, and it's so effective. And I think that's obviously why it took off and went viral in the first place, because everyone has this sort of like recognition.
Yeah, like a reference point. Like you don't realize is inside of you.
Oh, completely. Yeah.
Also, Alice, I want to explore this a bit further, and I was listening to you use the word beautiful to describe these images, and I was like, is it not further, like so far from beautiful? Because I thought there's almost like an absence of beauty in these images. Like I came home from it feeling like almost just want, it was nice to like return home and feel these like comforts of color.
Is it not like when you see something that, you know, you shouldn't look at, like a dead bird or something, and it sort of allures you in the fact that it's like wrong. Grotesque.
Yeah. Off. I think it was like beautiful maybe in the sense of like impressively done because it was it's realized physically. So I think there were like 4 sound stages used to realize these back rooms.
Yeah, they actually built them.
Built the back rooms. And as you say, you know, when you're going through these the backroom spaces that have been built that Chiwetel Ejiofor's Clark discovers, you know, you'll sort of have like a line running along a wall at one height and then it drops a little bit. So everything is just slightly off. And I think the sort of what I was trying to find as well is like, you know, the moment of horror that we're in, like in the 80s, you've got slashes, 90s, you've got like sort of more meta self-referential comedies, 2000s, we've got like the gory torture porn stuff. And then 2010s, you sort of start to have like the self-film, you know, Paranormal Activity self-filmed horror. And then the genre that we're currently in is like the genre of quote unquote elevated horror where we're trying
it's a metaphor for grief.
It's a metaphor. That's what I mean. So I was like, it's sort of getting to like where the film was both succeeding and then failing for me. So I was like succeeding in that because of the team that's been assembled around this film, the back rooms themselves are like, I guess, awe-inspiring or stunning or so deeply unsettling. It's really remarkably realized.
Art direction is like 10 out of 10.
The art direction is incredible. I also thought the sound design was incredible. You know, like the way it riffs on the fluorescent lights to create a score with it.
Yes.
Horrible and nasty. But I was the whole way through, I was thinking, you know, A24's really leaned into Kane Parsons is 20. He's 20. How remarkable is this? He's 20. As of this week, he's also become the youngest director to reach number one at the box office. Hey. And so I was thinking if they hadn't led with that promotionally, would I have noticed that he was 20? And I did arrive at the conclusion, yes, because I think the film is so determined to lay on the themes and both our protagonists in Clark and in Renata Reinsfer's Mary.
Yes.
Mary, who both have traumas and backstories and histories, I found that to be thin in the way that this really clever premise of the backrooms being a site where we explore the suppressed and our trapped, unprocessed, you know, trauma and grief, you know, was much more rich than the characters in the real world. And even the fact that, you know, Kane was born in 2005, you know, the 90s details, which he's so obsessed with, they're laid on so thickly and so heavily.
You're totally right.
You know, that felt as uncanny as being in the back rooms.
A lot of it is like, a vision of the 90s from someone who wasn't there.
Who was certainly not alive.
But at the same time, I'm like, well, maybe it works because the film itself, even before we get to the back rooms, there's this unreality. I looked at the sky when Clark was parking outside his store and noticed that it was like an almost a superficial blue, and there was a bright yellow hot air balloon floating there. And I was like, okay, so maybe the whole world's not real. It just had this Truman Show quality. I agree with you. And I think especially in the last 5 minutes, there's some choices made that makes some of it fall flat for me and maybe don't quite pay off what is set up.
Which maybe spoke to the inexperience a little bit, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I thought, you know, again, ironically, to put so much of his age back on Kane, poor thing, but I was like, it's sort of almost most successful in being this like video game world. As we explore the back rooms, you know, I thought it played with perspective so beautifully as like things are just off in different ways the whole time, like sort of upside down or like too big or too small.
And it's inherently tied to video games, like you just mentioned, because part of the lore from, you know, the original 4chan posts is that how you get to the back rooms is by no clipping through a wall, which is like it comes from video games where in old games the developers wouldn't make like concrete boundaries, and you would end up like, say as Mario, you'd like go through a mountain you're not supposed to go through, and suddenly you're in the final boss room with Bowser. So that's sort of wound its way into the lore of the back rooms, and that's what happens in the film, sort of.
I don't mind when there's that collapsing of mediums, you know, with games to films, and there's some really beautifully cinematic video games, and in the same way the gamification of narrative is kind of quite exciting in lots of ways with cinema. I very much resonate with what you've said, Alice. I don't think this film was made for me, so I'm just like going to acknowledge it. however, I love the cast and I was so drawn to this idea, so I was just like, I've got to see it. But it didn't quite land in similar ways. I thought that there were so many interesting elements that were brought up, and particularly Mary's story, and Ryan's, I like love her to be to pieces. So I was just so excited to, I think she's really well cast, and
they're both so great.
Yeah,
and I can't imagine a 19-year-old directing them. Well, I guess I have to, but I'm like, gosh.
To see
the whole cast, really.
Yeah. Oh my God. Chiwetel Ejiofor has such an incredible expressive face, and it's so well suited to horror.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I thought that was fantastic. But yeah, it's like, and you have, you know, these characters that are just so thinly drawn, I thought, which I guess you're saying.
Yeah, it's almost like they're bringing more to it. And I found myself as the audience member bringing more to this. You know, I did find in their performances, there was these elements of comedy, like really dark comedy, which I enjoyed. It made me think of Chair Company, which we've covered. It made me think of like the fake ads in Punch Drunk Love, where the mattress, like Philip Seymour Hoffman as the mattress man, and I love that kind of humor. So
Chair
I love
Company
these elements.
Absolutely has a similar tone that I'm now that I'm realizing the you know the world being off.
A beautiful companion piece, maybe.
Yeah.
But I was bringing that to it, and even like you could go as far as like you know office mockumentaries like The Office. You know, there's elements of that, and I loved those interactions, and I think I wanted more of it. But like you, Alice, I found the characters a bit thin. The actors were very much doing as much as they could with it, and there were so many interesting threads, but it just didn't kind of get. I actually don't need for things to be tied up, and I'm happy for it to be very ambiguous, but it did, it felt messy rather than deliberately so.
And I felt like it wanted to keep going. I was like, where's the next part? You know,
totally.
Because there were things unanswered that as an audience member I did want answered.
Yes, and it's not there's so many interesting. I think the strongest part is the soundscape, and for that alone it is worth seeing Backrooms in a theater and having that really immersive experience. I was genuinely scared. Sylvie, I do not know how you survived being by yourself in the theater. There's lots of strengths to Backrooms. I just feel like ultimately it didn't satisfy me enough, and I loved that it went into some really weird spaces, but it felt a bit repetitive and not in a clever way. I mean, like, I understand the whole world is meant to be repetitive, but I feel like there could have been something more done there. It could have been sort of a bit more grounded to, I don't know what I want it to.
If the characters were more fleshed out, I think it would have, because it's also a little bit slow. And I think sometimes we go to horror films for catharsis. And I think some of the film's choices, maybe some people do feel catharsis, or its intention is to leave us with unease. But I just walked away without that sense of like beautiful, glorious, like catharsis that you get from horror films sometimes. I think because it's not able to tie all of its narrative threads up, I felt, in the way that it maybe would have liked to, or maybe it felt hamstrung by the fact it was in a feature format and so had to tie them up. You know what I mean? So I walked away the same as you, of like longing really to have felt something quite strong and not quite getting there.
Yeah. And, you know, Kane did talk about being beholden to the like the canon of the original Backrooms story and making sure that the film was in line with that. And I think that probably held it back a bit. And, you know, on that note, because it is a story that was originally made for online, maybe that is the ultimate format for it. Maybe that's where it needs to live. And I think maybe if this had been a series of scenes uploaded somewhere, like on a website with some sort of creepy design, I might have been more impressed.
Actually, something I also, that's so different in the cinema space, is that it is not participatory in the same way that those online forums
are. Totally.
So much of what's been created is this almost like collective consciousness
and
participation.
Yeah.
You really
it's not his
recreate.
Story. Kane didn't create that story. He's taking from these sources and, you know, he's the one who like puts it to film. But yeah, it is a collective, there's a word for something where like a group of people come up with like a narrative together.
It's
like
crows.
A fancy word. One of those things.
Well, I still feel as though folks should check out Backrooms in the theatre. It is an experience. Wherever you sit on, there may never a show about spoilers.
Hi, I'm Kane Parsons, and you're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R.
It is now time for our second horror of the night. It's Widow's Bay. I'm going to play a little clip of it now.
I was talking to the guy on the ferry, and he said something odd.
What was that?
He said bad things happen here.
There is something about these seafaring towns. The superstitions. Their tall tales. I find it charming myself. What town doesn't have a checkered past?
Was there cannibalism?
No. I don't think that's right.
That's probably one of my favorite gags of the show. So yes, we have Matthew Rhys as Tom, the mayor of this sleepy island, who is determined to get some tourists on the island and make sure that he can sort of shake off this haunted past. Sylvie, Widow's Bay, what did you think?
I love horror comedy, so this is right up my alley. I love, you know, the conceit of, you know, it's a monster of the week type setup, which, fantastic. It calls to mind Buffy, X-Files, all the great shows of the 90s and 2000s, which I loved. It is funny and genuinely scary.
Yes.
So I think it excels in both elements. That's why it's working for me, at least. I'm on episode 3, I'm on episode 4 rather. I've seen 3. I love the performance from Stephen Root.
Yes.
Who was in Barry, another one of my favorite shows. Yes. Director Hiro Murai is doing an amazing job, and he also worked on Barry and has done like The Bear and Mr. and Mrs. Smith and heaps of things, so hugely prolific in TV direction space. And can I just say as well, it reminded me heaps of Jaws.
Oh, yes.
The concept of Jaws being, you know, this like tug of war between the people saying like, hey, there's a shark who's really dangerous. We think you should shut down the beach. And the mayor being like, no, it's fine. We need tourists. We need the money. And and I think especially in the episode about the sea hag, they really lean hard on those references, which is a lot of fun.
Totally. How about you, Alice?
Yeah, I've taken the full plunge into Widow's Bay. I'm really enjoying it. I intended to watch a few episodes today, but have found myself binging it. And I think that, as you have pointed out, Sylvie, as well, there's so much that's clever about this show. So the, you know, one thing up top in terms of like talking about its craft, the writer's room is actually a mixture of horror writers and comedy writers. And I think that's what's allowing it to. So I think tonally it's so perfectly balanced. I think it is actually quite hard to land horror comedy, and it's doing it so well. The creator is Katie Dippold, who's best known for her work on Parks and Recreation, as well as director on The Heat and then the more recent Ghostbusters that was all women-led. So I think the physical comedy in this series is just so on point. And, you know, as you say, there's a lot of references to Jaws throughout. Even the title treatment of the Widow's Bay poster is really reminiscent of Jaws.
Oh, yes, completely.
You know,
and then like a Stephen King paperback.
Paperback, you know? Exactly. Yeah. Widow's Bay is set in New England, as was Amity Island as well, is set in New England. And there's even like a passing reference to Widow's Bay being the new Martha's Vineyard, and that is where Jaws was filmed.
Oh,
so I think there's a lot of like quite intentional nods, but this time from the perspective of the hapless mayor. Yeah. And the setup of the show is so great and so simple. It's like this mayor has been waiting 3 years to get some coverage of the island. There's no Wi-Fi, there's no cell coverage, even though it's set in the current day and age, everyone's still relying on landlines. It's so funny. Like the mayor has like everyone's numbers memorized. He's always dialing everyone. So he's finally got the New York Times to come and cover it, but then the island's woken up at the same time. Uh-huh. So it's just and leading to a really great tension between Mayor Tom's desire to bring some more economy into the town and the locals who both resist change for one.
Yeah. Mm.
And then also are, staunchly warning Tom about what is flagrantly in front of their face, which is a series of hauntings and spooks. And I think there's a lot of lore to this show that's going to be unraveled, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, Matthew Rhys as Tom is exceptional.
Oh my god.
And the Parks and Rec connection, you know, I did notice that. I didn't actually know there was a connection, but I noticed the similarities.
The cast of characters.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
We're all in agreement tonight. Look, this is such perfect balance between horror and comedy. And like you said, Sylvie, they execute execute both genres so well. Like, there's so often a tendency to sort of give up a little bit. Like, I think about Scary Movie and, like, yes, they might be focusing on – it's a very different kind of humor in those sorts of films, but it's, like, this is just, like, schlocky. They don't really care, and there's not that care given to all the other elements of it. In this, it's, like, the complete opposite. There is so much detail in the characters, the costuming, the lighting, the narrative, everything is so, they take it so seriously. And that's what I love about really good, like, comedy. Kate O'Flynn, though, I have to give her a shout out as Patricia. That is possibly, Sylvie, this episode may be still to come. She has more of a starring role. Maybe you're up
episode
to
it. Episode 4.
Episode 4. It is episode 4. Okay.
But Patricia, I know the character.
Yes.
From, yeah.
Yes.
The council.
She has a bit more of an involved, like, she has an episode really to her own, and I absolutely adored this. It was so unhinged. Her performance is perfect. I just love this show. I was describing it to a friend as like a cozy horror.
And do you know what I just thought of as well?
Yeah.
It's like Fawlty Towers with horror.
Yeah.
It's Basil Fawlty.
Because there's all these kind of operational needs and things that need to be done.
It's always someone important is coming. We need to be normal and everything needs to be nice and amazing. And then just everything that could possibly go wrong goes wrong. But the things going wrong are like ancient curses.
Yeah. And just to kind of tie back, I suppose, to Backrooms, which we discussed at the start of the show, but this kind of like office place tension and horror as a side of kind of horror and comedy, I feel like is so fruitful and put to excellent use in Widow's Bay. Like, it's just such a interesting dynamic of how you present outwardly to the community who maybe voted you in. And I just love that tension. It's exactly my kind of humor. So I just delighted in this. This is one of the best TV shows I've seen in a long time. And it's just a joy to watch. Really exciting, nice, relatively short episodes. I was genuinely scared of some elements of the horror.
Oh, yeah, like I'm pretty good when it comes to scares, but my husband is a very light touch. And I'll just say, like, he was leaving the room during multiple points of multiple episodes. Yes. Just like, no, I'm good.
I've had clown nightmares since.
Oh, yes.
Let's just say that.
And that actor. I'm forgetting his name, but he was in The Righteous Gemstones as well.
Yes.
Very funny guy.
Yes.
Perfect casting. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so good is that they've really thought about how that's going to land as well in those scenes. And I can't work out. I suppose everyone's just bringing it. You know, like, you've got such clever narrative flow to it. There's just really great lines of dialogue. I was laughing out loud while watching this alone. And I was like, I think that's a good sign.
And I love the way it plays with expectations, how it will set something up and you'll feel really clever watching it going, oh, I know what's going to happen. Oh, this and this and this. And then they'll subvert that. And every time I'm like, oh, they surprised me. really fun.
We're in such also like a fragmented viewing landscape as well for series. And so I feel really excited to latch onto series like this that do feel a bit more water coolery as well.
Yeah.
So when this came up as a potential topic of conversation for us, I was like, great, because it's dropping week by week, so it feels like you can catch up.
Yeah.
But it's also one of the few ones as we've got so many services to pick from that people are seeing and watching and getting excited about.
It's a word of mouth thing because I didn't know anything about it. I didn't get any ads for it. People are saying Widow's Bay, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and what a lovely thing to then like come together and like be so overjoyed by our delight in this series.
Yes.
You know?
Delight is so perfect, Alice. It's exactly what I haven't felt delighted in a TV show for a long time. I think like there's so much focus, particularly in that horror space, on things being really dark. Like, we made the gag about everything's about grief. But it kind of is. And like, there is grief in this, and it is just dealt with in, there's actually
grief
one of the funniest.
Grief can be funny too.
Yeah, one of the funniest 100%. Lines is about talking about someone who's dead. And I thought that was so hilarious, that whole scene. I can't say enough good things about this TV series. I hope everyone sees it. It's a delight.
Yeah, binge it.
you're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R. And I meant to say Widow's Bay. I'm so worried I was going to say Wiggles Bay. I've been listening to that as well on repeat. Widow's Bay is currently streaming on Apple Plus. Yep. You're listening to Primal Screen on Triple R.
Triple R.
You've been listening to Primal Screen on Triple R with Alice McShane, Sylvie Van Wall and myself, Flick Ford. On tonight's show, we discussed Kane Parsons' debut horror feature, Backrooms. which is based on a viral web series and is now screening at major and independent cinemas. And we finished up our horror double with the comedy horror series Widow's Bay, which is currently streaming on Apple TV here in Australia. Highly recommend checking it out. Thank you to Lulin for her producing support. Sylvie and Alice, it's always a pleasure chatting film with you.
Yeah, likewise. And let's hope we can see Mayor Tom in the back rooms in season 2 of Widow's Bay.
Fingers crossed.
Thanks for listening to Primal Screen, a weekly radio show airing Monday evenings on Triple R. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast version and feel free to get in touch via the Primal Screen Facebook page or the Triple R website.